So you didn't want to go off my copious notes this week.
You know, you took some amazing notes, and I was just like overwhelmed, and then I was like, oh wait, we haven't talked about the trailer yet.
This feels more important. This is germane to the discussion, and I could go from those notes that I made yesterday in a blind rage or something.
And we will, don't worry.
Yeah, this may be in a fugue state. It's impossible to say. Let's talk about the trailer for the 1995 Babysitters Club movie.
Who are we, by the way?
Who are we, and why would we do such a thing? My name is Christy.
And I'm...
You're not going
to
say your
name. I didn't know if you were going to, like... And I didn't know if you were going to say, like, I'm Christy, and this... Or, like... I
no,
know
no, you get to say your own name.
Sometimes you say your last name. I never know if I do. You say your last name at the end of the show. That's what it is. Because you're always like, I'm at Admiral Christie, but with two A's.
Yeah, yeah, I have to. Yeah, gotta explain why it's funny. Yeah, no, I mean...
You have to. And remember, everyone, if you have to explain why it's funny, that means it's really funny.
Exactly. It's on like a higher plane from usual. Oh, my name is Christy and your name is Phil, and mm-hmm. this is a show called Pizza Toast. We used to talk about the Netflix Babysitter's Club series. Someday we'll do that again.
Yeah.
But right now we're talking about the 1995 theatrical release, The Babysitter's Club.
There is something though that we haven't talked about yet, and it's kind of the elephant in the room.
Yes.
Not real. I mean, because it really hasn't been like weighing on me, but just in relation to the Netflix show, there was some major news that came out in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have the name of the new actress?
You would think that I would have. You would think that because I mentioned it, I would have.
I wasn't presuming that you
I would have pulled it up, but I didn't. And so what I'm doing right now is I'm kind of riffing for a while.
I just found
it. Thanks to the first link at hand, which is Cinema Blend.
Of course. Yeah.
The fact is that that Netflix's season two of The Babysitter's Club own Soshi Gomez, who we love.
Yes, has MVP.
Has been lost to the multiverse of madness.
Yes, she is co-starring in the Doctor Strange vehicle. I'm actually very excited for her. America Chavez is real plum role. I'm so happy that it went to her specifically because I think she can. Mm-hmm. I think she'll bring something very special to that character, who is one of my favorite comic book characters. Like, actually,
yeah, she's a great character.
Not just making that up. Like, a huge fan. So they obviously had to find a new Dawn, mm-hmm. and they found one, and her name is
Kendra Sanchez. Kendra. Mm-hmm. Sanchez, who you might know from the Netflix movie Finding Ohana.
The first interview I read with her, she talked about how she manifested the role for herself.
Yes.
And she's really into crystals and mm-hmm. woo-woo stuff. And that made me very happy, and it feels extremely Dawn. But they rolled it out the news in a very cute way, like her finding out that she got the role and all of the other girls being very excited about it. It was the best possible way they could handle this situation.
And the smartest possible way, because I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you're privy to this information, but young fans of things can be fickle.
No.
Yes.
No.
I hate to break it to you. But they can respond to things like recasting and behind the scenes drama as personal affronts, and they can turn on a show like that. So this was a wise way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Show that everyone's on board, everyone's happy, they're all going to miss Soshi, but she's going off to do bigger and better things at a rival streaming service.
I think the important thing is that they really presented that none of this was like acrimonious. Like,
exactly.
this was all very above board. And of course she's going to accept the role that she will now be locked into for however many years.
What if it had been like one of those embarrassing like public proposals when she's just like, I have to talk to my agent.
What I do love about this casting choice, in addition to the fact that she is now America Chavez, is like, honestly, the Babysitter's Club can happen in perpetuity too. So maybe the rest of them are locked into this forever.
This is a great precedent because it means that these girls are essentially interchangeable. As long as you get someone of roughly the same height and racial background, you're gold. You can just, you can just keep, it's like when the covers of the books changed. You just keep rolling them out.
One of, I told a friend about this, a friend who absolutely loved the Netflix series that so she was getting replaced, and she just immediately went pale and said, is it going to be a Latina girl again? And I was like, yes, don't worry, they're sticking with that.
Don't worry, they're not absolute idiots.
They are not in this scenario. Yeah. Maybe in some, but no, this is smart. No, this is, I mean, that was absolutely worth mentioning because we loved her so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Kendra Sanchez will be great. Yeah. She seems like a very good fit. Yes. The press photo they released was of course adorable because this is the most adorable group of people. So
as you said, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness is going to be buck wild, and what a great chance and opportunity for Xochi Gomez. So
it's a very fun entry point. But
speaking of fun entry points,
speaking of something, you told me this week that this was your first exposure to this series at all, just the trailer for the movie.
I mean, obviously I had heard of the Babysitter's Club, but I had no like concept of what it was. I didn't understand. Mm-hmm. I didn't know the plot. I didn't know who these characters were. But my first like in any form of media was seeing the theatrical trailer. I don't know what I saw it in front of. Like, I know I saw it in the theater because I remember being like, oh, okay. This makes a little more sense now. I mean, bear in mind, I was in college at the time.
Yeah. I was going to say, were you a person who would still see Disney movies through college? I certainly was.
I mean.
Yeah. Because, like, I remember seeing Toy Story 3, like, shortly after graduating. But Toy Story was out this summer. Mm-hmm. I saw it three times.
You're right.
You may have also seen it three times.
I saw Toy Story several times. But I was in college when it came. And when Toy Story was a summer release?
Yes.
Okay.
Or I believe it was a May release and it had legs.
Okay. May of 94?
95.
Okay, then that makes sense. Yep. Because I remember coming back to school and friends, because I started, this is a little, the life of Phil. I started college the fall of 94.
Oh, that was a huge lie. It was November 95. Sorry. Okay. Sorry, everyone. So and it had long tail into 96.
That makes sense.
Sorry, go back.
So I started college in fall of 94. So fall of 95 was my sophomore year. This makes sense because Toy Story came out. I went to go see it. And I had a bunch of friends who refused to go see it because they were in the moving image department, who they were interested in being animators. And they were terrified at the thought that computer animation might be putting hand-drawn animation out of business. And so they refused to support a movie that would further the agenda of computer begin the agenda. So that was like a big deal, is my friend seeing it.
Sure.
But this is even further in the weeds. Saw Toy Story for a second time because our college rented a 16mm film of it to show in the student union building. So the second time I ever saw it was before it was on home video, was on a like reel to reel where they had to keep changing the reels in our student union building on a little screen they'd set up. And that.
Oh, I love that.
Mwah, best way to see a Disney film.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I guess so. Summer 95, there would be some Disney movie or another.
Or family film. Point. Just stuff.
Yeah, I assume that it would be run before that. I will say this trailer tries to have the tenor of a teen movie in a major way. So they could have shown it ahead of... That was not peak time for teen movies. I would say they reemerged in like 97, 98. This is a little early.
Right. 95 in film. I mean, if you're looking at like the summer of 95, Don Juan DeMarco, perhaps? That was the summer of A Goofy Movie, which I definitely saw in the theater.
Yeah. Oh, also, I mean, that's a similarly, like, that is a movie that appeals to teens or attempts to, but it is in the guise of a children's movie. So I feel like that is actually a natural choice to put the Babysitter's
Club. I am looking at this list of films that came out starting in April, and I'm like, I saw a movie every week because I saw a Goofy movie. I saw Swimming with Sharks. I saw While You Were Sleeping. I also saw that.
Yeah.
I saw Crumb. I saw City of Lost Children. This was quite a spring summer for me. I mean, what else was I doing? Casper. I saw Casper twice. Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh, wow.
So this trailer could have been shown before Casper. It could have been shown before a half dozen things.
Casper, it absolutely could have been shown in front
because
of.
Because Casper had that Christine weird... Ricci. Was it Devon Sawa in Casper?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. He is the ghost boy in that movie.
Yeah. So Casper was Casper, everyone's favorite dead boy until Logan Bruno showed up in the Netflix Babysitter's Club series.
He was dethroned by non-Southern Logan.
Casper the Friendly Ghost was played by young Devon Sawa, who shows up at the end of Casper in his corporeal form as handsome heartthrob boy. To Christina Ricci. And suddenly Casper becomes a proto-teen movie.
Yeah, it's upsetting now. I don't think I saw that movie at the time. Is Bill Pullman in that movie?
He most definitely is in okay. Bill Pullman and animated Bill Pullman form.
Big summer for Bill Pullman.
It was a huge Pullman summer. We all took a ride on the Pullman car and through Land of the Deadsville and While You Were Sleeping, Bill, though, yeah.
Yeah. Good another very strange but good fun movie. And
I had a friend who described Bill Pullman as his masculine ideal after that summer.
Interesting. Lone Star in Spaceballs is like one of my, that's like one of my males. Like that's like,
see,
we've talked about this. It's definitely him and Rick Moranis in Little Shop, which is like sort of a perfect combination, but sort of an absurd one.
But it really was the summer of Pullman. We all love that.
What if Pullman had played Peter Horton's role in this movie?
I went to go see Casper the Friend, Casper. Twice in the theaters. Second time I saw it, I brought an ex-girlfriend because I was,
of course,
because I was Phil Gonzalez and I was like always friends with my exes, and
and
I was like, you gotta see Casper. I was like, it's a lot of fun. And she was like, okay. So we go to see Casper. At the end of the movie, end-ish of the movie, I turn to look at her, and because I'm like, she hasn't said anything or like reacted in a while, she is having a full-on psychological meltdown in her chair. We get to the parking lot and she is sobbing uncontrollably. She is sobbing so hard. I can't like even talk to her. Like she can't speak. And we get to the car and we sit there for a while. And she finally is like, she never dealt with the death of her grandmother.
Oh,
and it was Casper the movie. It was seeing Casper the movie that suddenly triggered like this wave of grief.
Wow.
Because
my thought was just that she was very upset over the appearance of Devon Sawa at the end, but that is...
No, and I was like, I always just was like, I don't remember who directed Casper the Friendly Ghost, but I wish I could have written to the director and been like, I know that this movie is probably going to like have a weird place in history, but just know that you like that this movie had at least a profound effect on at least one audience member.
So you... saw the trailer for the Babysitter's Club movie before you witnessed a psychological breakdown, is what you're getting at.
Perhaps. Here. Or it could have been another movie. I don't know.
Apocryphally, this is what happened.
Because you know how movie trailers are. As long as the movie trailer isn't at a rating above the movie you're about to see, it's fine. So we could have been to see While You Were Sleeping, and it could have been like, oh yeah, and check out the Babysitter's Club, parents. Your kids will like that. Like, who knows?
I really miss when trailers... weren't as big of a deal, and also you didn't know which trailers were running ahead of the movie.
Yeah, and you hadn't already seen them online anyway.
Yeah, this is a retread of what we've talked about before. But
remember, our listeners, Christy and I live entirely in the past.
We do. We absolutely do. I'm stuck somewhere between like 2001 and 2007 right now.
So this was my first exposure to the Babysitter's Club as a piece of media, and it. Looking at it now, this is clearly a trailer where they were like, just make it look like something people might want to go see, please.
Yeah. And, so,
yeah.
Yeah.
But to me, as an audience member, I remember being like, oh, this actually looks pretty good. Mm-hmm. Like, this actually looks, I wasn't expecting anything like from what I would think of a Babysitter's Club being, but this looks like an enjoyable film with like some enjoyable performances. Like, as a jaded college student, I remember thinking that.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
So obviously I was just hype watching this trailer as a child, but watching it now, it feels, I mean, what you usually do for a trailer for a comedy is you cherry pick the best lines,
mm-hmm.
and you spotlight them, or the most outrageous scenes, depending on like how appropriate or inappropriate the particular movie is. We do end the trailer. I'm not going to start at the end fully, but we do end the trailer with the best dialogue exchange in the movie.
Exactly, exactly. What they were aware was the funniest exchange in the film.
They knew what they had in Zelda Harris and Stacey Lynn Ramshauer. Like, this is the exchange, of course, about how much money they're going to make. And Zelda Harris as Jesse saying, we could almost buy a car. And I'm not going to try to mimic the delivery here, but Stacey Lynn Ramshauer making a meal out of the line. And in 5 years, we can drive it.
A better meal is made out of the line in this trailer than is in the movie. Like in the movie, she says it and then it just kind of moves on. But because it's a button, like you get that moment to like breathe and like actually laugh at what she says.
Yeah.
Trailer might be better edited than the actual film, by the way.
I would say so. There are a few lines like pulled out of context in this that make them seem better. So what is, like, let's break down this trailer. Yeah. We've got a voiceover narration from Christy, which we have in the movie throughout. It's basically the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, just told really quickly. We get shots of them at the pizza place. We get the quick shot of Christy like doing that, like playing Clue with Marianne and doing like the finger handshake.
Yeah.
And
they're like doing a pinky swear, I think.
And a lot of shots throughout the trailer of the clubhouse or the greenhouse.
Yeah.
In fact, the greenhouse gets a weird, like, if you weren't familiar with the Babysitter's Club, you might think, oh, they must meet in this greenhouse all the time. Like they must meet in this building. This is like this is the club. The Babysitter's Club house is this facade.
The way the line of Dawn's, the like, it's, I think it's Dawn who says, we spent some of the best years of our lives in here.
Yeah.
Which also, like, in Babysitter's timeline is a confusing line just because, you know, eighth grade on loop. The way it's cut, you don't know that it's about Claudia's bedroom.
Right. To be fair, if you saw the movie, you might not be aware it was Claudia's bedroom because they don't really go out of their way to call that out.
No, never, never.
In fact, you would be forgiven for thinking that was Christy's bedroom because Claudia certainly never says anything.
She doesn't. The only time... there's also shots of her in there by herself, but they do not show the rest of the room. They just show her cool calendar that she's drawing on.
Right.
So it's very misleading.
So yeah, so we get a shot of Christy answering the phone saying Babysitter's Club. We get a shot of that random kid painting the Babysitter's Club sign because, as we know, the babysitters love making the little kids work for them.
They do. They do. Something that's best. I feel like that will never get better than it was on the HBO series.
Right. Because that was every episode.
Yes.
We get the shot of Christy at the town directory. The sign above it says Stony Brook, a great place to live.
I'm sure it is, too.
And she's hanging up the Babysitter's Club sign. We see the seniors camp flyer, which is a fun gag in the movie.
Doesn't really make sense here.
No, but yeah, then we see the close up. I do want to say that you get this shot of the need a babysitter, call the Babysitter's Club and the phone number.
Mm-hmm.
But you also get a nice shot of what's in Stony Brook, because this is the town directory.
And I did not notice this.
There's consultant's firm. There's a silk screening company. There's a surf shop, which is a funny thing to have in Stony Brook, Connecticut.
Wait, why? So this is... Is this a map of the whichever town in California?
This is just a map of the town in California. This is not something the art department threw together.
They just slapped the Stony Brook thing across the top. Yeah.
The Glendale Federal Bank is there.
They didn't think we would notice, but we did.
And there's a bunch of attorneys in Stony Brook. A Montrose Vacuum is on there.
Sure,
you know, like
why
in
not?
Stony Brook. It's like there's a lot of vacuum centers. There's a vacuum center, a vacuum salesman. It looks like there's a phone company.
So is Glendale like the vacuum capital of the world?
You, don't you know it? That's where all the vacuums
I do now. Also, like, is Glendale's slogan a great place to live? And literally all they changed was the name.
Oh my goodness. I don't know. Is Glendale a great place to live?
We're going deep on this one. We're in the weeds with this one.
I don't know, but if you look it up, you get the top five reasons why Glendale is one of the best places to live in L.A. County.
Ooh.
Oh, wait, no. Is it? Oh, wait, no. I was hoping that actually would be a sign, but it looks like it has in the past been referred to as a great place to live. But I think any town has probably said that about itself.
That's true. I mean, we talked about this. The blatantness with which this film is made in California is off the charts.
Yes.
A lot of the time I was wondering how warm they must be in what they're wearing.
It looks pretty darn warm. But knowing that, knowing now, just like having it right in front of your face, or, you know, like freeze framing a 30-some-year-old movie trailer and doing the deck to work yourself, this is not the East Coast. This is
not
the East Coast. So we get that. Because this is the first exchange in the trailer, this is to your casual viewer the plot of the movie, which it isn't actually. You said this.
Yeah, this is Luca and Stacy.
This is Luca and Stacy. She says her line, "I brought a little gift for your little friend or your little cousin," which I'm going to say right now had to have been Stacy not saying the line properly, because no writer would use the word little twice.
You wouldn't use little twice. Yeah.
They probably just keep it. We get three takes out of these kids before they have to rush back to their trailer and do their mandatory tutoring. So she says, "I brought a little gift for your little cousin." And then Luca comes down the stairs and he's like, "Hello." And
she's like, "I'm Luca, little cousin. You really take that in."
Mm-hmm.
Christian Oliver is an adult man. There is as much Luca and Stacy in this trailer as there is anything else.
And you called this out, but there is as much La Boheme poster as there is Luca in every shot of him.
I love the La Boheme poster. It's such a nice detail. Like, was that Maureen McGill? Like, did she need that set dressing?
But it's such a weird, like, it's framed so oddly. There's this boy and La Boheme. And I'm like, I'm not really sure what my eyes are supposed to be looking at here, because the color palette is exactly the same on child and on poster.
This is true. Oh, they even cut to the "Are you gonna kiss her" in this scene.
Yeah, they throw that in as well. It's a weird moment to call out. Are you gonna kiss her? And then, which is clearly from a different scene, because who's the little girl? That's
Rosie Wilder, fake girl.
That's Rosie, and she's wearing a completely different outfit when she says that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah.
Then do we get Alan?
Alan. I thought you said Ellen.
Sorry.
We get a shot of all the babysitters and their charges pulling flowers in. This is where we get introduced to the concept of the summer camp.
Yeah. How clear was it to you that they had a summer camp in this trailer?
Pretty clear, because we see this giant banner that says summer camp.
That's fair. Because I was like, they don't like, they're obviously not going to show the very funny moment of the senior day camp to establish.
No, no.
This is what they're doing.
Christy has a voiceover that's like, "I've got a great idea for the summer," or something like that. And you see the summer camp banner immediately followed by Jackie Radowski baseball batting the ground, which somehow causes his
it really
foot
hurt
to hurt
him. Okay.
Look, he clearly just hits the ground. He hits
he
the
does,
ground.
And he screams.
If you freeze it, he's about 5 inches from his foot. He smacks the bat on the ground, and then he goes, "Ha!" And he falls over.
It's very good.
Yeah.
It's not good. I just, Danny Tamborelli as Jackie Radowski is such perfect casting. They didn't even try to replicate it in the Netflix show. They were like, nope, we give up.
I'm not going to let go of this. Okay. He hits the ground with the bat 5 inches away from his foot. He falls over and grabs his foot. He grabs the bottom of his foot as if he had stepped on something. Like,
so even if he had hit it, his toe with it, he did not, still wouldn't make sense to do what he does. It feels very like kid wants attention for injury that did not actually hurt, but there was no injury to begin with.
None of it makes sense. Absolutely. Nope. Absolutely.
Nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, if I was a little, okay, so I was going to say if I was a little kid, I'd probably be charmed by this. But I will say right now that Mitzi watched this movie and she did crack up when that happened. So,
oh, huh.
So it's a funny moment to her. But
did Mitzi like this movie? I mean,
I don't know if I would say she liked this movie, but she was entertained by it.
Okay.
I think she's a little like, she's looking at the Babysitter's Club now, I think, in much the same way we are. It's this constant like analysis of how moments work and how characters are presented to her.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know if she had any kind of like pure response to it.
That's fair. It's what she is surrounded by is people who like to analyze the Babysitter's Club, and she yes. cannot help but join in.
Now, that moment is closely followed by a moment, a quick shot where you might go, okay, we've been introduced to the romantic interest. We are now obviously being introduced to the sex interest because we get the sexiest shot of a man ever in film history.
Don't do this to me. This
you get this,
so
no, you get this shot of Christie's dad that's like, he's like, oh. Like, it's really quick, but it's like, it's clearly like this, like, yeah, like shot of
this
the
is
dad.
Weird. Was this like, let's get the moms to bring the girls to the movie? Because this is a smolder. Like, this is.
Yes.
This is such a. I don't even really like looking at it. Like, it's not in the context of the Babysitter's Club. Like, it was smart to. I mean. Mark Evan Jackson aside, because I know he is not like the universal, he's not like the Peter Horton. There aren't really any, like, there aren't hot dads on the Babysitter's Club Netflix show, and that's okay. I think that's good. We have Alicia Silverstone, so you can't deny that there is one hot mom, but even that, it isn't like, it's not this.
Well, because the Babysitter's Club TV show, the Netflix series especially, because it's so well made, is very much shown through the eyes of the children. Like, everything is
yes.
through, so it's a little more heightened, it's a little more colorful. This movie is seen through the eyes of, I guess, the director, like, who's like, I got this sexy friend.
She enlisted all of her sexiest or most prestigious friends.
Yes.
Oh, and Ellen Burstyn, not in this trailer, right?
Right, right, right. She is not, that plot was held as a secret.
Which is weird because, so when I was trying to break down what is the actual plot of this movie, and it's hard, my hierarchy of what this is would be Christy and her dad, mm-hmm. Summer camp and greenhouse and Ellen Burstyn, Stacy and Luca. And this trailer just removes the part where the summer camp has any kind of problems, right?
Right. This isn't, they're not trying to sell. And I'm going to commend them for this, because this is what made me go, oh, this is different than what I anticipated when I saw the trailer. Is if they had just shown a bunch of like summer camp hijinks, that's what I would have expected. I would have expected mm-hmm. like, oh, it's like a preteen comedy, like wacky, like shenanigans.
Yeah.
Because of the way they frame this, it's like, no, this is about like young romance. It's about a father coming back. It's about more young romance. Mm-hmm. Understand that I could not tell the difference between Stacy and Dawn when I saw this trailer originally. So all I knew is that there was a couple of guys after this one girl. Come to find out it's two different girls.
Oh, what if there had been an Ellen, Dawn, Luca love triangle? I would have got it. Oh.
Listeners. This is for the listeners. If any of you out there are good with like film editing, like video editing, get your copy of The Babysitter's Club. Recut this entire trailer using the actual movie, taking out all of the used footage and replacing it with footage of Alan actually acting like Alan and Peter Horton acting like a jerk. I just, but use the same, because we haven't gotten to it yet. We'll get to it in a second. Use the same songs. because those are, well, we'll get to it, but yeah, new, yeah, do we'll a new there. Trailer of the Babysitter's Club reflecting with the movie more with the movie, like the balance the movie out a little bit better for us.
Yeah.
Just, or just put in more Alan. I just want more actual Alan, because he comes across as way too normal in this trailer.
He seems like a normal person. Like he gives her a paper flower.
Mm-hmm. It's the end
and
scene.
And asks her out. Yeah.
It's the last Alan moment. He's like, will you go out with me? And she's like, are you kidding? And he's like, no, I've never been more serious, baby. Or whatever it is he says. Which in the
I'm going to become the Joker.
Which in the trailer makes it look like she's like, I can't believe the handsome boy is asking me out. Whereas we know in the movie, she's like, yes, I can't believe the Joker is threatening me.
Well, here, then it cuts immediately to Alan Grey likes you,
mm-hmm.
Likes her, likes her. And there is no indication that she would not be happy about this.
Right.
In reality, she is gutted that this is going on.
Yeah. That's quickly followed by Stacy fainting in the park.
Yes.
But which looks like a romantic moment.
Yes, falling into Luca's arms.
Yes, falling into Luca's arms. Discussion, the kitchen discussion about how old he is.
Mm-hmm. But not about how diabetic she is.
No.
Sorry. I would also like to know, like, is it ever offensive to call attention to the fact that diabetes has never been a bigger deal than it is in the Babysitter's Club? I don't know. I lived with a woman who was diabetic for like a year and a half, and it never came up. It literally was never mentioned.
Right. And it's worth pointing out again that in the books, diabetes is a huge deal because it's made clear over and over again that she doesn't just have diabetes. She has super diabetes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, she actually cannot have sugar. That's just not a thing that she can
right.
do.
Right. And I don't mean to like sound flippant when I say, but it is like, it is, I don't remember what it's called, but it's like super duper diabetes. It's like the worst.
Yeah.
And so like she has to kind of, but her obsession with her diabetes in other media comes across as weird if you don't establish how severe it is.
I actually like that they lessened it slightly in the Netflix series by the finale. Like they addressed it, I think, the very best in the Netflix show of the three things. But in the finale, or not the finale, the episode I always think is because it's the wedding, but then we still have the camp postlude, like the in-between postlude. She eats cake at the wedding and says that she's going to be careful. But yeah, it is a little weird when they haven't established, like, oh, this is actually a part of her life that she has to think about all the time.
Right. And she gets the insulin pump.
Yes.
By the end of the series. So you also, she can focus a little less on it than she can in the books, because she's allowed like just to not have to think about it all the time. It kind of, it's
right.
It's modernized. It's more self-regulating.
I'm thinking about this scene in the trailer now and how they cut out my two favorite lines, which are, he's been to Europe and he's from Europe.
Yes. Which adds a real, like, strange layer, because the scene is basically them saying, like, he's 17, you're 13, he's 17, and then that's ancient. And then she says the line about, he's been to Europe, if, like, it's some sort of, like, I don't know how to put it, but, you know, just, he's European, so, you know, he's...
Yeah, he's allowed. Like, that makes it less... egregious? No, it's still wild.
Still awkward. Yeah. Still awkward. Then we get this shot of Christy.
Oh, no.
Christy hanging out with her dad.
you get the worst best screen caps.
we get this terrible screen cap of obviously it continues to move. It's not as solid. They don't just cut to a photo of Christy making the worst film face and hold on it. But I do want to point out, and this is important, because we were having this discussion as a family last night, that that Christy has in this movie, she has the tooth gap. She has a tooth gap, which is as we have noted in our family, because tooth gaps run in one side of our family, that you don't see the front tooth gap very often in Hollywood and on television. And so it's always like, right on, like, letting teeth be teeth. I have to call that out, because she has a solid
Yeah, it's a powerful gap. Really gap. I mean, there was a point at which David Letterman was the only famous person with a tooth gap, right?
Yeah.
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 So I kind of like, I like a tooth gap. I like something weird about somebody's teeth. Like, I don't like a perfect smile. I mean, they're fine. It's just not, it's not my preference. I had one for a while, then I chipped both of my front teeth, and I highly prefer it.
You highly prefer the chip?
Oh, yeah, I like it so much. I think it looks so much better than when they were totally formed. Hey, ask me how I chipped one recently.
How did you chip one recently?
On New Year's Eve, I was on a New Year's Eve Zoom, and my husband had made garlic knots, and I got very excited while I was eating one, and I bit down too hard on the fork, and then I clapped my hand over my mouth and said, oh, no, because I had heard what had happened.
Was anyone recording this Zoom at the time?
Not at that moment, but I could ask around. It was a few different people, and they just saw me run out of the room, leave for about 5 minutes, and then come back. And I didn't say anything until there was a lull in conversation. I was like, guys, I just chipped my tooth on a fork.
Never in the very history normal thing for me to of do. New Year's has anyone been that excited about garlic knots.
Oh, have you had garlic knots?
I've They're had really garlic knots. Yes, yes. Really I haven't injured myself over them.
I recommend it. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, we get gap. A shot in the trailer from one of the funniest moments of the film. Again, a Mallory moment. Which is this one. So in the trailer, we get the shot of all
yes.
the babysitters turning their heads to look at Mallory. And again, Mallory, MVP of the movie.
Yes.
Not doesn't get her due, but maybe that's for the best because a little goes a long way. But it's a great shot. We don't get her reaction to them looking at her because it wouldn't make any sense in the context of the trailer. But this is one of those moments that makes the movie look more competent than it is. Like, oh,
yeah, that is true.
This looks like a pretty well choreographed film.
I was going to say, this looks directed. This looks like a shot that was intentional. Because this is just all of the girls looking at Mallory in the context of the movie after realizing that she brought an ice cream cake to Christie's birthday party rather than a cake that would stay unmelted.
Yes.
And yet her reaction is gold in the movie. But this is the first time you're like, okay, here's our comic superstar.
Yep. And it makes the movie look like, oh, I bet it's full of moments like this. Like dry moments. No, it's not actually. It's full of more.
It couldn't be further from the truth.
In fact, we're about to get to a moment. Then we get the girls getting sprayed with the water. Then we get the entire 13 scene.
Yeah. So Lucas screams 13 a couple times. We don't get as much cab driver as we could, but you know.
As we should.
She rules. This is the him screaming that she's 13 over and over again. It feels like, to me, the entire movie, you know how everything's going to end by the end of this, right?
You do. They share the entire, this entire plot line, at least, with you.
Yes. She's looking at the camera.
This is actually, I took a still from the trailer. We get the, we have the cab driver, like Christy said, staring straight at the camera. I don't know. Did she not know she was being filmed?
I don't know. There are so many things about this shot that I love.
We've got, yes.
Because this is Luca doing the very most overreacting.
15 or 13.
Claudia doing a really good, like, disgusted / like aghast face. Like, how yes. could he be acting like this? And Stacy just awkwardly staring out the window.
Yeah, Stacy attempting to astral project herself into one of the other cars, which, or I don't know, she could just get out and walk to one of the other cars because, again, they're clearly not moving.
Yeah, they're definitely not moving. Also, like, it would not be hard for her to find another cab.
Right. But notice how much Luca looks like, oh my God, what is his name? Famous, very famous actor. Played, oh my gosh, what is his name?
He has me one role.
Franco. He looks like James Franco.
Oh, he does.
He is making the James Franco-iest face.
What if James Franco had played this role? Timing would have lined up okay, right? He might actually be too young to, let's see.
He might have, how old is James Franco?
Oh no, he would have been in the pocket, I think.
Oh my God, where was he at the time?
Was he on Freaks and Geeks yet? No, that was a few years out.
Yeah, that was like, yeah, that was we had a little ways to go, but he would have been too young. Yeah, he wouldn't have been 17. Yeah, I think this photo like pretty much it just encapsulates the movie. Poorly constructed set.
Somebody is looking at the camera.
A taxi cab setup that looks like something Ed Wood threw together.
Three across it comfortably. Like there is room on Claudia's other side.
That front seat doesn't look like an actual seat.
It's a bench.
And then of course the people in the back who aren't moving. It's beautiful. It's actually.
Like to verify that I have been in a cab in New York City, even on the Upper West Side where Stacy lives. It doesn't look like this. Does not look like this.
All right, so we have the freak out scene.
Yes.
We get a few shots of Stacy outside the club. We get a few shots of Stacy and her mom. This is like that thing where like a trailer will show you a scene that's like a few seconds long and then you get a bunch of quick cuts of character reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And then then we get into like Christy crying and yelling. This is her moment. This is your favorite moment.
My favorite. Yeah. When she screams, you don't care about me. And everyone who does care about me is mad at me. She gets so upset. And honestly, in the movie, it kind of hits. Like, to me, that is one of the better. Skylar Fisk is good. Like, mm-hmm. she's not perfect, but she's good. And she's that moment works for me. Also, because Peter Horton is just kind of like, what are you going to do? Because he doesn't care.
And it would work great if it then wasn't. They immediately cut to her yelling at Watson.
Yeah.
And then immediately cut to her climbing a fence and getting locked in a cage. It looks like out of context. You're like, wait, I thought we were watching some sort of Babysitter's Club movie. This looks scary.
This becomes a high stakes thriller suddenly.
Also, and I cannot emphasize this enough, but they select lines of dialogue from some of the characters that are less than convincing. Like Claudia saying, we have to go find her.
I mean, even in the movie, I'm not, like, out of context, it's worse.
Yeah.
In the movie, I am still unconvinced that Claudia actually cares about Christy's well-being at this point. I would have trouble were I Claudia in particular.
Yes, because I remember
the
at this
Claudia
point...
line they should have included in the trailer is, you really let him down, Christy. She says it about Jack Uranowski, and it made me laugh out loud.
Listeners at home, please recut this trailer, include that moment instead of this moment. Instead of Claudia saying this, let her say, you really let him down.
But at this point, we more or less know, Christy's friends are going to help her and they will save her.
Yeah. And if Claudia's dead delivery on that line wasn't enough, we are then treated.
Oh, we got a Rachel Lee Cook. Yeah.
We are then treated to, again, Rachel Lee Cook, who we need to remind everyone, does not know what a movie is at this point.
No, she has no idea.
She looks like a hostage in every single shot, particularly in this trailer. And her one big line is delivered. Like she says her line and looks like she just saw someone climbing in through her window.
Her eyes are so big and so dark all the time.
And they are so huge. They are perfectly reflecting the set lights right back at the audience. Like
that is true. That
you can
true.
See the lights, like all three lights reflected in her eyes very brightly. again, she would go on to greatness, or the Josie and the Pussycats movie.
Which is greatness.
In which she is perfect and the whole movie is perfect.
The flawless artifact.
So after Rachel Lee Cook's dead-eyed delivery of her line, we get... Okay, so backing up a little bit. Throughout this trailer, because it's not a movie, it's a trailer.
It is a movie.
We have had the song... Bow, dang, 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 dang.
It's a ubiquitous song.
What is
this
it called?
This is a song that's in every trailer. Yes. This is... practically Delamitri's role to me, but
that song.
Oh, wait. No, I know what you're going to talk about. And it was very exciting and very shocking to me, this musical transition.
What is this song called, though? I cannot think of what it's called.
I would have to.
So, ladies and gentlemen, please bear in mind that it's 1995. Phil Gonzalez is in college. You would think he's in tune with all the greatest stuff coming out on the radio at this time. No. All I was listening to at this point in my life was Show Tunes and They Might Be Giants. That's it. Show Tunes, They Might Be Giants. I had no idea what any song was on the radio until like 1998 when I graduated.
I have a guess, but I don't think it's right. Nope, it's definitely not right. Ignore what I just said.
God, I wish I knew what the name of this song was. Hey, listeners, what is the song from 90s that
tell
goes?
Us.
What? Oh, tell us.
Tell
yes.
Us. Yeah. No, this will be really like. This is very upsetting because usually I'm good words. At this. But we cut to the Cranberries, which is
yes.
the important thing.
So this is the moment when I was like, "Oh, this is going to be the best." Okay, this is the moment where I was like, "This is going to be the best movie in the world," because the song "Dreams" by the Cranberries. One of the most beautiful songs in the world ever recorded, mm-hmm. with one of the most stunning vocal performances by
Fact.
By a lead performer in any band. Outstanding. You cannot listen to Dreams and not want to just cry and hug all of your friends.
Yes.
So of course it suddenly bursts in over a montage of everyone crying and hugging their friends. Mm-hmm. This is the moment that sells the trailer. It's like, forget all that terrible acting and all the weird plots. You don't understand what's going on. Just know you're going to be in tears as the Cranberries play. And oh, your life is changing every day in every possible way. Like, that's like what the movie is about. And they just like, bam, they nail it in that 15 seconds. The trailer suddenly justifies every choice it's made.
Oh, man. Okay, so I'm sorry, but just Googled some of the lyrics. Oh, it's better than Ezra's good.
Okay, thank you. And what's funny is I think I had this album.
Oh, I'm sure you did. The important thing about it is that my Google led me to the subreddit Tip of My Tongue, and it was somebody saying, what song says, and it gets more intense with it, with each one.
Is that how you found it? How did you find the song?
I typed the phrase.
No, what did you type?
I typed, let's see. Okay, OH space WUH space UH 1995 song.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's great.
It worked.
It
worked,
did.
Didn't it? I didn't. I wasn't going to like sing it into my phone and see if it could identify what I was doing.
I guess what he's saying is, ah, it was good living with you. Aha, it was good. It was good living with you. Aha, it was good. Good, good, good. That's on genius.com. So
how do people interpret what that means? Because I love Genius.
The Genius annotation for the chorus is, quote, she tells him in the letter that it was good. It was a good run, but it's over.
Okay, yep. Fair enough.
Because apparently the chorus of Good by Better Than Ezra is the lead singer reading a letter, which I did not know. Just too sure, or maybe I'm just too frightened by the sound of it. Pieces of note fall down, but the letter said, aha, it was good living with you. Aha, it was good. Aha, it was good. Living with you, aha, it was good. Aha, good, good, good. What a terrible note. To leave someone.
Guess which song I'm going to be listening to for the rest of the day, though.
I'm listening to it right now.
Good.
Maybe I'm just too frightened. Yeah, better than Ezra. In any case.
Was that how every alt-rock singer started things out, like, in 1995? I feel like that is a very common, like, kind of nasally, like...
It was that... Remember when everyone was trying to do Eddie Vedder for a while?
Yes, yes. Because I'm now when I say that, I'm thinking, no, the guy like Collective Soul and Soul mm-hmm. Asylum and other bands that had soul in their name, they all sounded like Vedder school of vocals.
But then you have this sort of like,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like they were all like, I've listened to one song in my life. It was Word Up by Cameo. That's how you sing, I guess.
I was hoping you were going to say it was Love Shack by the Dangerous 2.
I have one album. It's Fred Schneider's solo album. I've listened to Monster in My Pants. That's how you sing.
Oh, boy.
No, I used to do Love Shack at karaoke. That was, like, one of my go-to.
That is a fun karaoke song.
You have to have
song.
Two people. It's a two-parter. Like, it's a duet. Mm-hmm. But this is karaoke for duet. Because that's you're taking two microphones off the stand. But they would be like, okay, next is Phil. And I'd get up, and it would say Love Shack on the thing. And people would be like, yay. That drum would go, and 17-year-old Phil would get up to that mic and be like, if you see a faded sign at the side of the road. And people would just be like, we're eating out of your hand now.
Yeah.
Because he went full Fred Schneider, and that's what you have to do.
Mine, like my Bring the House Down / Shock People by Doing It song, like that I keep in my back pocket, is the Beastie Boys' Intergalactic, because I know every word, and there are different cadences for each Beastie Boy. And I do them. Wow. I would never do that one in a group. That is my song.
That's your song. My other one was I would do Like a Prayer, but I would do it as sort of a like nebbishy character. So nice. I'd get up and it would say Like a Prayer, and the first line was God, you know, or Madonna goes God, and I would go God, and people would be like. And then it was, life is a mystery. Hit those R's, bring down the house. That's all I'm saying.
When is the world going to be a normal place so I can do karaoke in Minneapolis?
I don't think I've done karaoke in like 20 years. It's been so long.
I used to go literally once a month with the same group of people.
No, that's not true. We did. We went to a friend's birthday party a few years back, and Alana and I brought the house down with If I Had $1 Million.
Ooh. I think that I'm trying to think if there are any that I'd like do in a certain character. Yes. Any emo / pop punk song from like 2003. Mm. Like Sum 41's Fat Lip is a good one.
Yep.
There's definitely a specific voice you have to use. Same with Blink-182's I Miss You, because it starts out, this is really relevant to the bass. The song starts out Mark Hoppus doing the vocals, and his are very standard. And then you have the Tom DeLonge, where are you, come in. And it's really, like, super jarring for everybody who's
listening.
How does
the chorus of that go? It goes,
don't waste your time on me. Yeah. You're already the voice inside my head.
I believe that song was used in some video game in the early 2000s that I played a lot of. And
that song is good.
It was one of those skateboard games, and it may have been Disney Skate. Disney
Skate
Adventure.
Okay, I was
going
to say that is a very like Tony Hawk song, but it is not in any of the Tony Hawks.
Disney did a Tony Hawk clone, like literally did it. They used like the engine. They did a Tony Hawk clone skating game. It's actually a really good game, but you are like Woody and you're skating throughout like Pizza Planet. And
yeah, I gotta
like,
go. I need to go find this right now.
And it has this pop punk soundtrack that is to die for. And it's called like Disney Skate Adventure. It wasn't popular, but it find it, play it, brilliant. So
no, this is the rest of my afternoon is trying to figure out a way I can play this, because I might still have a working like PS2 or something. We'll see.
So this is the point where the trailer man sneaks back in, and he's like,
"Yeah, is this the guy? This is the voice, right?"
This was the guy who did like the comedies and family films.
Yeah,
there were like a couple of guys, and I'm not sure which guy this was, but it's like. From the best-selling books by Anna Martin or whatever, it becomes everyone's favorite club you love to love or whatever. And this is like after hugs, now it's shenanigans, and they're all like laying in their circle. They're putting like shaving cream on each other's face.
They definitely show like one shot of the most excruciating thing in cinema, the biology rap.
It doesn't look bad in the context of the trailer, because it just looks like because you have dreams playing underneath it, and you're like,
yeah,
they must be doing some kind of dance to celebrate their friendship. No, they're not.
It's the opposite.
It's
actually
the opposite. It's a brain wrap. So it's a big montage of them all looking happy and friendly, loving each other. You see Alan Gray present the bouquet of magic flowers to Dawn, who looks pleased to see them. You see them all blowing out the candle. You see Christy with a cake. You see them all hugging each other. You see them hugging each other. You see them standing in their final pose from the movie. Mm-hmm. and then you get the logo drop, Babysitter's Club, which is brilliant. A nice logo.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you get the button. You get the button joke. Jesse wearing the greatest hat the 90s ever saw. And I am not lying. Jesse is wearing this. What style of hat is this? I'm going to show you the hat.
Yeah.
It's
speaking of hats, I have not been able to find Christy's The Boss Dad hat yet. I'm still looking.
There's Jesse's hat. It's beautiful.
That hat is just incredible. It's a bucket hat.
It's definitely
a bucket hat. It is striped like maroon and olive green and orange. And mm-hmm. honestly, it works. Like, she's pulling it off. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Other people in this movie wear hats that are bad. This hat is good.
And I'm also realizing now, for all the Pepsi and Clue and everything we get, obviously no one paid to have their ketchup featured in the movie. So the ketchup on the table at the pizza place is turned firmly away from the viewer.
We do get a lot of Coke and Sprite, though. Yeah. That is true.
And so, this is the joke. In 5 years, we can drive it. Mm-hmm. And all of us in the theater chuckle heartily at the little kids. I will say that she says, in 5 years, we can drive it. Christy clearly opens her mouth to say something at the end. Because again, the joke is run over in the movie. In 5 years, we can drive it. Come on, guys. We've got to... Not in this trailer. In this trailer, they cut her off so we can laugh and make plans to go see this new baby movie. And that's it. And then we move on to whatever the next trailer is, while you were sleeping or whatever it may be.
Good trailer? No, it's not. It's a misleading trailer.
Not the most misleading trailer in the world, but
no.
I would love. Okay, you know how like with Suicide Club, they went back and they re-edited the whole film. They got the people who did the trailer to re-edit the movie.
Yes, yes.
Because the trailer was obviously playing better than the film. I wish they could get the trailer house to re-edit the Babysitter's Club movie. Is it too late? Does that footage all still exist?
Probably. No. I mean the movie still exists, right? Well, I think it
re-edit it, get the Suicide Club editors to do the Babysitter's Club, like, so that each character gets like that like screenshot with the name on the side and they're like likes and dislikes, like down
okay,
the side.
So anytime a movie's end credits have like an image of the person who played the role and like it says who they were, that's my favorite thing. Like, show that over the end of any movie,
like Clue. They do that with the cards that turn around.
Yeah There's a few really good examples of it. I actually think the end of Avengers Endgame, where they show them kind of in like least to most important order, yeah, sequentially, is good. The Twilight Saga does exactly the same thing, and it's over a song I like, and I'm okay with that. They should have done that with this movie, obviously.
Do you know what my dream... This is the stupidest thing I'm ever going to say. I wish that Phantom Menace, because it's episode one, I wish that Phantom Menace hadn't started with an opening crawl, because you don't need to catch anyone up. It's not the second mm-hmm. episode. I wish it had instead started with a classic list of all the actors going in a diagonal down the screen, and that Rise of Skywalker had ended with that... Seeing all the characters and the actors who played them throughout the entire... To me, that would have made it seem of a piece.
It's not a stupid dream at all, and would make me like both movies more. And also, like, we've talked about this. Neither of us hate the prequels, as far as I know. Like,
I just don't think they're... I don't think they're great. I think I have blasphemed by saying I have watched Attack of the Clones more than any of the other ones.
Yeah, which is... I mean, that's like objectively, that's a maniacal thing to do. Like, that's absolutely chaotic. But all Star Wars would benefit from some tweaks to the opening crawl, except The Rise of Skywalker, because it opens with "the dead speak!" exclamation point. And that's funny every time.
I also wonder, and I know this won't happen because Disney burned too many Star Wars bridges after Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, they sure did.
But wouldn't it be something if we got a Snyder cut of that? If they were like, considering this movie actually does have about 4+ hours worth of plot in it, let's just turn it into a miniseries and finally flesh out some of that stuff that we missed.
Honestly, I don't really want to revisit The Rise of Skywalker ever again, but if there was a way for them to make it not whatever it was, I might watch it. I don't know.
I'm going to blaspheme again by saying that Rise of Skywalker, although it was a mess and came out of nowhere with its like ideas, has a couple of my favorite Star Wars things ever in it.
Is one of them Babu Frick?
That's a given. That exists outside the movies.
That is so, so good. I didn't hate it when I saw it, because by the time I saw it, a lot of people already had and been like, oh, you're going to hate it so much. And I was like, well, now my expectations are below zero. If I smile once, then I will have enjoyed this movie. And of course, there were a few scenes that I liked a lot. I really like some of the people that are in Star Wars. Like, that's not, didn't change.
Also Babu Frick. The stuff with riding the horses on the spaceship was my favorite.
Yes, that was some good stuff.
I didn't realize I had been waiting to see horses on a spaceship, and there it was.
Every time somebody rides like a giant animal in that trilogy, it's very good.
But see,
the casino planet defender over here.
See, I don't like the casino planet at all, so I'm just like,
love the casino planet.
I'm just like, I can't handle it. I don't like that. I don't like the Harry Potter boy. I don't like any of that.
Love Canto Bite. Love everything.
But I know we have discussed this in private, which is the fact that by the time Last Jedi was about to hit the theater, Disney had put such an iron claw of creative control over the movies that you're not seeing the product of any one filmmaker. You're seeing the product of a company that just invested X millions of dollars in a theme park and needs those movies now to hold that status quo for the rest of the run.
You can't
do anything interesting with where the Force is going to go, because you still need kids to pay for their $600 lightsaber and take their Force test. Like, if you dismantle the notion of the light and dark side, you've dismantled half of your theme park. So, of course, they were going to be like, back, you can't, just get it done. We'll save the interesting stuff for the TV series.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Did you know that at Galaxy's Edge, employees are not allowed to use the term younglings? It makes sense.
I guess.
Why? But the fact that that's a rule that exists tickles me like nothing else. Because there's so many children. What else are they going to call them?
Right. What do they call children if not younglings?
Love the term younglings.
Youngling. It's just funny because, like, we've learned since then that Star Wars has its own word for the toilet, which is like, I guess, because maybe poop doesn't come out of every alien. So there's just, you need something that you can go to when you need to get away from a party. So you say, I got to go to the refresher. And that sounds like that's a good term for a bathroom, like the refresher, because that's really why you go to the bathroom most of the
time. It's better than bathroom.
Yeah, you go to refresh, to like sort of like get your energy back so you can go back out to the party and be like, how's everybody doing? Why did you need another name for children?
I've hidden in the refresher so many times at parties, so yeah.
I guess maybe to other alien species, they're not children. They're like, they're just young, but we have a different relationship with them.
I'll poke around. Like, I think I heard this from somebody who has been employed by the Disney Corporation, so I don't doubt it, but I need to find out the veracity of this claim that I've made, because it seems wild now, but it also seems exactly like something that Disney would have established.
Does Star Wars have alien swears like they do in every other sci-fi franchise?
Like Battlestar?
Do they have, like, space swearing? Or I think they just swear.
Criffing is like, the F word.
And what do they use that in?
Fanfic. It might, maybe it's not
real. I think that's probably from like the RPG.
I was gonna say that's probably EU somehow.
But Han Solo says like, "I'll see you in hell," and they say "damn" and stuff. Like it's not.
It's not. Yeah, it's never too bad. Like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know? No, that's a tangent. This isn't. Is it? But...
Yeah. Okay. So, Babysitter's Club. That's it. That's the trailer.
It is.
This is the trailer.
Not turning off the episode. Yeah,
this is the trailer that made me. This is the thing that made me forever associate the Babysitter's Club with Dreams by the Cranberries. To me, mm-hmm. I thought that was a thing for a long time. I thought the song was used in the movie, which it's not. I thought maybe it was like just closely associated with the book series somehow, to the extent that when Mitzi and I first started reading the books together, and people started saying, "You should do a podcast with Mitzi. You should do a podcast with Mitzi." And in my head, I was always like, "That would be fun." To me, I was like, "Oh, what would be cool is to have a chiptunes version of Dreams as the theme song." Like, to me, that was mm-hmm. always it. Because obviously, that song is related to Babysitter's Club. It wasn't until a lot later that I was like, "Oh, that was just something the editors did in the trailer."
No, there aren't real bands in the Babysitter's Club. I mean, if there's any music, it is very generically described, or it's very, very old. Like, well, they talk about the song New York.
There's the theme song, like the opening song. Mm-hmm. That's like not Say Hello to Your Friends, but it's kind of like, it's called like Girlfriends, the song Girlfriends.
Yeah, I don't care for it. There's a couple songs that like this, like there's a stinger that plays every time. Like Cokie Mason has a theme.
They have themes, a light motif, if you will.
Yes, yes, that is what I would call
it. And of course, we'll get to this, but there's the song Girl Girlfriend, which is written by David Michael Frank. Which is so weird.
We're doing a whole episode on David Michael, so maybe we can touch on that.
And performed by BSC. There's Hannah, I Locked You Out by John Fay, performed by the Caulfields, Emma Caulfield. Step Back, performed by Letters to Cleo. Let's Get Busy, performed by BSC. Who they are, we don't know.
That's the Cokie song.
Summertime, performed by Moon Pools and Caterpillars.
I like that song.
Which contains elements from Lowrider. Let Me Know, performed by Xscape. Don't Leave, performed by Ben Lee. Hold On, performed by Sun 60. Say It, performed by Clouds. Everything Changes, performed by Matthew Sweet.
Which was a weird one, yeah.
Here, performed by Moonpools and Caterpillars. Daddy's Girl, performed by Lisa Harlow Stark. And That's What It's All About by David Michael Frank. Performed by Todd Smallwood.
I do want to point out that Daddy's Girl song is played over Christy being emotionally destroyed by her father. Yeah.
But we will definitely do an episode on the soundtrack.
Yes, we will. We got to get a musician on here. You are a musician, but we got to get another one.
What makes you think I'm a musician?
You can sing. That's close
not
enough.
A musician. That's like at most a busker.
Well, do you know any musicians? I do.
But... I know a lot of musicians.
Yeah.
Successful musicians.
You probably know more than I do.
Not as successful musicians, but they all got heart. We should invite every single musician we know, have a giant Zoom call, play them over Zoom the Babysitter's Club soundtrack beginning to end, but halfway through, you and I just log off.
I didn't like the idea until I got to leave midway through.
So that's it. That's the trailer to the Babysitter's Club. Do we have anything else to say in this very long episode?
I don't think so. I might have more to say about Star Wars, but I can save it if you'd like.
Yeah, just so you know, the trailer to the Babysitter's Club is 1 minute and...
Yeah, don't point out how long it is.
And 55 seconds long. This is one of our longest episodes in recent weeks, so...
Look, I'm in a good mood today. Maybe you were too, or you weren't, and now you are, so...
Hey, I wore a clean shirt. That's all I'm saying.
You did. I wore my... I'm sitting differently from usual. Oh, I wore the Christy and Claudia and Marianne and Stacey and Dawn shirt.
I'm actually wearing under this my Anakin Skywalker shirt.
Oh, one of my favorites. Yeah. probably your most esoteric reference.
It's a shirt I bought that has it's Little Orphan Annie's logo. It's the Annie movie logo, but with her, it's spelled A-N-I, and it's with Annie replaced by a Little Orphan Annie-esque drawing of Anakin.
It's very good.
It's a mash 'em up which apparently everyone hates. But
I have to get rid of my shirt that says "Feel the Dern" in the Star Wars font because it's too broken apart, and I am gonna need a new Star Wars novelty shirt. So there, I'm on the lookout.
I have it on good authority that there are Star Wars novelty shirts in the world.
The dream. But will they support the Time's Up or Time's Up movement the way that one did?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
If you're going to match.
That was how I justified buying it at the time.
The way I justified buying it is I see them and I buy them.
Nailed it.
And are we done? Have we drained this dry?
I think we have, and I think we can say goodbye to our friends. You can follow us at Pizza Toast Pod on Twitter or email us at pizzatoastpod@gmail.com. Let's see what's what.
Yeah, and goodbye, friends.
Goodbye, friends.